My name is Michael Fortune, and I run a page on kind of social media called folklore.ie, and it's just a studio space for showing off the work that I do.
Yeah, I came across it there a couple of years ago, and I had you on the show a few years ago as well. And the work that you do, Michael, is phenomenal. Like, what you're bringing those lovely old stories to life again.
Yeah, and I suppose I don't know how I said it, how I got on this track. I suppose I started about the late 90s using video camera, and just, I suppose, wanted to capture the faces and the voices and the stories of ordinary people, and to capture them and to get them, like the way you're doing your work here, is to get them back out to the people themselves so people can enjoy looking and reflecting on themselves and who they are.
Mm-hmm. So you say you started that in the 90s. Where has it brought you today?
Well, I'm still, funny, I don't know. I'm still on the same old railway track, you know. But come here. It's brought me to a very rich practice. I really like what I'm doing. I feel very privileged to be in a position to be able to meet the people that I do and to go around. Now, I'm self-employed, so you're still always trying to earn a scratch and trying to earn a living, and you've got a family to rear and all that kind of crack. But there's different strands. Anyone is in our area of work, in my area of work in particular, you've got different strands that will feed the pot, you know. But it's a privilege. It's a pity there's not more people doing it, I'll be perfectly honest with you. All around the country, we need it, never need it so badly. Mm-hmm. But it's lovely work. And I said, I was asked down here to Kerry to work. And I hummed and hawed because I got, again, when you have children, you don't like to be as far away from home as you normally would, you know. Mm-hmm. But I pushed it because there's a lovely woman called Siobhan Griffin. And she asked me, and I said, right, I'll do it for you, I'll make that push.
Mm-hmm. So tell us why you were here.
Yeah, well, I tell you, she was asking me to come down to Valencia. During COVID, I did some upskilling with some people here in Kerry, some other practitioners. And then I kind of said, she asked me to come down to Valencia to look at stories around the cable. Now, I know, when I come down to parts of Kerry, there's men here and women here who have been writing about this for the last 100 years. So I'm conscious I don't want to go in and step on anyone's toes. And I'm also aware that they have done Trojan work, much more than I could ever do, you know. But I suppose they just wanted a new set of eyes to come in to look at some of the things, because sometimes a new set of eyes can see things slightly differently, you know. But still, I was indebted to the people they met. There was local historians, Michael Lyne, Des Lavelle. There was people that I met that just literally, they welcomed me in, and, you know, they didn't see me as a threat, you know. They welcomed me in and shared stuff with me.
Yeah, and I imagine that you all learn something from each other.
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely. The men, I enjoyed being in the company of the men. And literally just before I'm talking to you there now, I met a woman called Mary Claire. And just in our home, people bring you into their home to show you things, you know. Her particular house was the little wooden house. If any of your listeners know, they'll know the story about Valencia and the connections over to Newfoundland and over to America, then the cable. And hers was a little wooden house. There's a field called the Telegraph Field. You know, not the way we all have names on fields, like we'd have, you know, the Mullion or the Goron or whatever, right?
Yeah.
But the fact that this field is called the Telegraph Field, and the Telegraph Field was from where the wire came in and they sent the signal across the Atlantic. Mm. But she had the house. She had a little hut, a little wooden hut. Now, it wasn't a little wooden hut either, it was big enough. And it was, the hut was there, and then it was moved into Knightstown. And then, sure, I think a local man brought it across from the island to the mainland, to Dukes, and they put it up as a little holiday home. Now she lives in it as a permanent home. So it's actually, I walked in and was going, I can't believe that I'm walking into the building that they used in 1866, July 1866, to send the first signal across to America, you know.
What was it like actually being inside there and just having that thought?
I couldn't believe it, because when she stood, well, I tell you what, I walked in the spot yesterday, and you say to yourself, really, like, here we are with our mobile phones, and we can get so much information left, right and centre. And this was like literally a physical cable that went across. But to be in her house today, there was something lovely. She stood me on a mat in our sitting room, and she stood up straight, a very tall, straight woman. And she stood up and she said, I'm standing in the spot, she says, where this first signal was sent and received from. And just again, there's an energy. There's an old energy in the space, I always find. And when your feet are touching the ground. Now, she wasn't in the exact field because the house has moved, but she was in that house, though, in the structure of that bit of wooden house.
And tell us then, when people were coming to the event last night, and I saw on the post that people could bring their own stories to life, so what did you hear?
Oh God, come here to me. We had a show last night, and we didn't realise we had a show at all, honest to God. I turned up, and you know your usual these events, and you say, who's going to turn up and what's going to be said and all that kind of crack. And I'd always keep a loose mind or an open mind, and sometimes in a situation you just have to read a room. You know it better than anyone. You read what's going on and figure out, right, listen, how will this happen? And I'm performing, and then I spotted three local men, Des Lavelle, and I forget the other names of the two other men now, but they're all working the Coast Guard and were connected to the signal station. And they start talking, And next minute I was watching them over the table, three of them talking. I said, these, put these three together now, because we're cutting scalps off each other as well. You know the kind of way? To be having a bit of crack. And but we're telling all the information about what it was like, like growing up.
Three rogues,
exactly. Yeah. Put the three of them up and put the biggest rogue in the middle of them. Desley, he won't mind me saying that. And this man is in his 90s now. And I just got my little mobile phone out with the microphone and I said to the rest of the lads, lads, you wish, sit behind, we're going to do this. And all I had to do was press start, and then now and again I'd have a little bit, I'd ask him, "Would you help? Watch it." And next minute more come, and it was the 70 minutes. Honest to God, I came away like, and everyone said it. One man said he went outside. He said his wife said to me, "says where's the husband gone? He's always gone outside." He said he's outside processing all that, because it was unreal to have these three men, nothing planned, not a thing planned,
yeah,
and just talking about stuff. Do you remember such and such, and the yarns and the messing. But all the information as well, all of it. So it's all one big package, you know.
Yeah. And you couldn't plan for that, could
no,
you?
No, not a way more. And my recording won't be the best in the world. It'll be a field recording, but I'll have the men's voices and stories and faces. And there was one, just loads of reflection as well. Loads of reflection, life reflection, and on about life on the island, like. And you know, it was different worlds. Even in the island, I noticed that as an outsider coming in. Sure, I could see Knightstown would be very different than Chapeltown. You know, one would be very more kind of a town that would have been very set up as an English, like with the industry of the signal station and all that kind of crack. You could see there was a different type of architecture and types of gardens, and you know, and all really good people. You know, they came to live and work there. And some of the, and that's the gas thing, some of the families were there. Des was saying, oh, his grandfather, I think, came from London, and someone else came from Cornwall, and even some of them names are still there. Like if you're a Mackie, you can look at the census. They would have come over at some stage. So that's what one of the things that signal station did. It brought new people and new voices. And you can even see it. And they were even talking about, I suppose, they had leisure. So they had nice gardens, they had apple trees that they grew, they had nice flowers. They had just different things. Mm-hmm. But you go to the back of the island, it was different again, because they were... But then they kind of... They needed each other too, you know, that kind of way?
Yeah.
Because one was... The boys were buying a bit of turf off the lads at the far side of the island. So the money was circulating around a bit, you know.
You were saying earlier, you know, not a lot of people do enough to collect these stories and kind of preserve them. But why? Why do you think not a lot of people are interested?
I think there's a growing interest now. There's a little bit of a growing interest in history. I've noticed this in the last 4 or 5 years. I've noticed in schools, I've noticed it with younger men in their 20s, right? And I think there's probably reasons. Social media has definitely helped. People say, oh, social media has helped, gone doubt. In some ways it wasn't coming from the top down, it was always coming from the ground up. I think everywhere you go, whether you could be in Longford or Cavan or Donegal, there's probably a little local Facebook group that has like local history or local photographs.
There's a few of those around Kerry, for example. One off the top of my head is the Ballyduff kind of through the years, and there's Clorgan through the years as well, actually. And again, what they do there is they post old photos and they're trying to see, like, who can you name, who are these people, so we can try and trace them. And I think it's a really good idea for people to be like, I actually know that person, or that could be a relation of mine.
Absolutely. And when I was setting up the camera last night, 100%, and I was setting up the camera last night to record the men, and I said, I'm going to tell you something here, a piece of advice. And I remember a friend of mine from Limerick years ago, he was wanting to record someone, an older man, and he said, oh, you're going to record a man? No, I'm going to get the best camera now, he says. Then met him a year later, you're going to get him? No, we're going to get the best sound, he says. We're going to do this properly, he says. And a year later I met him, he said, where's that man? Oh, the man passed away, right? Man was gone. And any of your listeners who have got a mobile phone in their hand in their pocket or listening to this, and I'd say to anyone, just do it for your own family and even for your neighbours, obviously with permissions from people, but certainly for your own family, to go and sit down with the uncle or the granny or someone and record them stories, because you'll thank yourself, and people will thank you for doing it in years to come.
Mm-hmm. I think it's very important to note as well that, like, every day that we walk through in life is a day of history, you know, and we can't get that day back as well. So it's important for people to gather like they did yesterday and share all of that.
Absolutely. And I know, come here, devices for recording, can be, you know, they're intrusive, people saying all this kind of crack. But I know in my heart and soul that I will not, but I'd never be able to write down the stuff as fast enough, right? So that's why I would use the mobile phone. And they are. And sometimes when you take a little bit of video of someone talking, and sometimes you have to put the shoulders up and you have to write, I'm performing now, this is happening. And like, I was doing it all for the last 3 days down below on the island, and you're going, right, I'm working now. And then, but if I don't do it, I'll come back, I'll have nothing. You know that kind of way?
Yeah.
And I have to do it. This morning, I was just in with the woman in the house, the Telegraph cable house. Before that, I called to a woman and she had a lovely dresser. It was made in 1917, made from mud that was washed up from a Danish schooner. And again, I had to take my mobile phone out and just record her talking about it and who her great grandparents were and all that. Mm-hmm. And other things kind of happen too when the camera's on and when you're recording, you know.
I'm actually glad you brought up about the dresser, because I know the dressers have actually brought you all around the country, haven't they, Michael?
They have. I'm telling you, it's a sad pastime I have now, I'm telling you that. I have, and I don't have as many from Kerry as I should. And I have a list there. I've got Cork and Kerry. I have a big list at the minute. And if any of your listeners have one in Kerry, give me a shout, because I'll be back down. I'd been focusing on ones I'd already documented for years. And I love them still. Like the one there today.
What is it about them?
Ara, come here to me. The design. I love. Well, like, the functionality of it is one thing, and what it means to people. And even that woman there I was with today. Like, even though it wasn't a practical piece, it was a practical piece. Now it's like a little memento, a little shelf thing. She was able to touch a jug on it and take down a jug and say, "God, me grandmother had that. A neighbour gave it to her full of jam at Christmas time. Or this was my mother's plate that she bought." You know. And I always think if you touch something, sometimes There's an energy. There's something happens when you just connect with a story or a memory or something, right? And I see that playing out. But I love the style of the dressers. I love the handmade touches. I love the regional styles. I would know if you, as I said to you before, maybe before, you could drop me in different parts of Ireland, I would have a good guess where I am depending on the dresser that I'm seeing.
Interesting. And tell me, you know, with new modern homes now, there's obviously not that many dressers coming in. So what changed?
The fitted kitchen was the big thing back in the 70s. Back in the 1940s and 50s, one of the things happened in England actually was England, Scotland, it was during the war, a shortage of material to start. You know the cabinets, and they're lovely too. There was a kind of a cabinet we had back in the 70s in Ireland, 50s, 60s and 70s. They were kind of a very, a little light wood cabinet, and you pulled down a drawer and you could cut the bread on it. And there was kind of a speckly glass doors on top. Now, they were all different designs, but the English made them during the war, when they were short of material for houses that were being bombed. And the design slowly came over to us, and we started to make them then ourselves with glass, different versions. Local men had made them with glass doors in front of them. It kind of stopped being made then. There was still, you'll still come across the odd man that will make one for his daughter for a wedding present. I've come across a few of them still.
Why a wedding present?
There was a lovely tradition around the late 1800s, about 1880, 1890, to about 1930, 40, of men were making for their wives. So I've come across so many that a man would basically, his wife would come into his home, or maybe might get a house or might build a house, and that was the thing that he'd make for her. And I know one man, I've known a couple of men that I've met, and the stories that were always told, their children now or their grandchildren would tell it, is that the father was making the dresser on the kitchen floor with a saw, and the wife was holding a candle pre-electricity, and he'd make it up for her. But this man, the Galway, the Connemara families that were moved over to County Meath in the 1950s, they brought with them the Connemara style. And I was in a couple of houses in Ratcairn, and they're Connemara dressers in Meath, like, you know. And this one man called Marty Numaloge, he made them for his daughter, made one for his wife, his father made one for his mother, the Galway style dresser, but for wedding presents.
Unbelievable. Can you imagine saying this to someone now?
Yeah. Major wedding present, voucher for IKEA or something instead, yeah.
I know, but you know, as you said, like, there's something so unique as well in the stories behind them, which you wouldn't get in IKEA. And, you know, if people want to do that, that's fine by them. But I suppose having something so personal in your own home is so much more valuable, isn't it?
Absolutely. I think there's something in us as humans, when we can connect with something that belonged to a parent of ours or someone belonged to us, there's no connection. I think that's in us as humans, it's in us to connect. We take comfort in it, I think we do. And I think in the modern world we're living in, and I'm sure there's other cultures, not, you know, but in our culture, that connection to, whether it's the land or whether it's a wall that someone built or whether it's a piece of furniture someone did, or even, I have an old yoke at home and Granny used to keep salt in it, and sure, I use it every day, and if it breaks, it breaks it, and the children at home, but it's always lovely to have something around the house that someone else would have used before you, you know, that kind of way.
Yeah. It just gives it a bit more meaning as well. You know, you said you were on this journey since the 1990s. What's the most valuable lesson you've learnt?
But the Lord, now you're putting me on the spot, aren't you? God, what have I thought this for? Jeez, I
suppose, like, when you do meet so many characters as well, like, you're learning from them every single time.
Absolutely. One thing I'm beginning to realise is, getting older, I'm turning 51 now soon, I'm beginning to realise life is short and life is very, 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 very precious. And these things happen and change just like that, you know, just so quickly. And sometimes we the actual history is happening, as you said earlier on, the history is happening right in front of us, literally right in front of us. And sometimes, as a practitioner and like yourself as well, we kind of just have that step back we can take to have another look, a little look at things, you know, that luxury, I suppose, you know. Mm-hmm. Not everyone can see it, maybe have the time to do it. Maybe that's where we're programmed to be able to do it, be like that.
And would you be making the time for a book?
I did. Since COVID, I set myself, I've done two copies of the two versions of the Folklore of Wexford. Now, I have to stay local. I did two publications.
Naturally, yeah.
But I get them always printed in Walsh Island and Castle, Walsh Print and Castle Island. Every year, no.
There's always a Kerry connection.
Yeah, there is. You know, any stuff I get printed, that's my go-to place, yeah. And I wrote, two books. I did one in the Maybush as well. And as I'm getting older, I have so much digital content, I kind of realise in the value of printed word and stone and metal, you know, very physical things. And I'm kind of using that. And I love writing them. Sometimes the luxury of the time is always the hard thing. But I design and write them up. Because the way where I'm programmed, I like to have control of stuff. So I design and print it up myself. I design it all myself and compile it all up and then send it down to Kerry to get printed. And then back to Wexford.
And it comes back even better.
Yeah, absolutely. Use that something else to it. Yeah.
Listen, Michael, as you say, people can find you on social media, but if people want to get in touch with you with their own stories about their dressers, maybe their own past, how can they do that?
Well, if I can give you a phone number or an email, that'd be all right, yeah? Well, probably the easiest one would be folklore.ie@gmail.com. Folklore.ie@gmail.com. And then the mobile number is 087-647-0247. 087-647-0247. And send me a message, whatever, and if you have something, I'll be back again. I'll hopefully be back again in a couple of weeks' time. And I keep on doing what I'm doing. We need those people to feed us as well, don't we?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And everyone does have a story, no matter what they think.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, perfect. Michael, thank you so much.
No bother. Thanks for having me.